Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
North Korean leader Kim Jong-un is on his fourth day of a high-profile visit to Russia. He stopped by an aircraft plant that builds warplanes today, according to Russian state media. He also met with Russian President Vladimir Putin this week, who said that he welcomed possibilities for increased military cooperation with North Korea. Meanwhile, Kim Jong-un vowed full and unconditional support for Putin and, of course, his war in Ukraine. Plus, the Kremlin is now saying that Putin will visit North Korea in the near future. Let's put this in context with Jim Walsh. He is Senior Research Associate at MIT's Security Studies Program. Jim, welcome back. Always good to speak with you.
Peter, it's good to be with you.
You know, visually speaking, this has been a remarkable trip. We saw Kim Jong-un's slow-moving armored train. There was this 40-second handshake with Vladimir Putin, the red carpet. But what does it say to you that Russia is turning to the most isolated and repressive country in the world for help with this war?
Well, it says that things aren't going well. Let's back up a second and say, you could say, as many analysts have pointed out, this is garden variety, everyday international politics. You know, my enemy's enemy is my friend. And when you apply that in a contemporary context, it's, well, if we're being sanctioned by the same countries, maybe we should cooperate. So in that way, it's the same. You see that a lot in international politics. On the other hand, this is different. Why? I think because both parties are particularly desperate. Russia is fighting a war. Nothing's more important than that war. When you're fighting a big war, that's the most important thing. And then everything else, the question is, does it help or hurt the war? That's where he's at. So he's willing to bend policies, you know, 180 degrees to do things that have been unprecedented, to do what it takes, because he is all in on this war, but particularly having faced a mutiny, he's certainly aware of the stakes. And for North Korea, now several years out past the official pandemic, if you will, but still isolated, having taken a tremendous toll at home economically and in the humanitarian arena, it is also a desperate country. So it's not just the normal trade here, trade there. It's trade among two countries that are not in a good position and need to improve their position.
In relation to that war, Russia needs weapons. And it's worth remembering that North Korea has one of the largest militaries in the world. How well equipped is North Korea and what can they offer Russia?
Well, because both North Korea and South Korea for decades thought that they might see a reignition of the Korean War. Remember that there was no peace treaty. That was just an armistice. So they all collected conventional armaments for a conventional war, probably more so than any two countries in the planet. But, you know, that's changed, right? That now South Korea is making a lot of missiles and North Korea has gone nuclear. So some of that has changed over time, but they still have this backload of all of this conventional equipment that was made for a conventional war. And other folks don't have those stocks. So
is it still good? I mean, there's been some question about what. What do you think?
I mean, I was just about to say there's quantity and then there's quality. And I guess what you have to do is figure out what the discount rate is. You know, if you're buying 100 shells from North Korea, not 100 of them are going to work. And so you're probably not going to want to pay the price on 100. So it's going to be that sort of assessment and negotiation. There might be joint production. There might be production that is given over in North Korea to the production of things specific for a Russian market. So there are lots of possibilities here.
Yeah, fascinating. Now, Kim and Putin, they met at a spaceport. Let's talk about that. Why does North Korea want technology for space? What does Russia have to offer North Korea?
Well, of course, despite the fact that Russia had a, what should we call, unfortunate accident in its most recent space venture, it has...
On the moon.
On the moon. It is, nevertheless, you know, and it is, it has had an accomplished space program. On the other hand, North Korea has long had ambitions to be in space, has on many occasions attempted to launch satellites into space and has not have a very good track record. And in this year in particular has faced setbacks. And so that interest is not diminished there are different reasons why countries pursue satellites. Sometimes it's prestige, sometimes it's military applications, whatever. They want to do it. They wanted to do it for a long time, and now maybe Russia can help them do that.
So, Jim Walsh, how nervous is the Pentagon and the White House about all this? Was there some indigestion there this week?
Oh, sure. I mean, I think what you worry about is not the particular, I mean, anything coming out of this is bad. Okay, let's just start there. You know, if Russia has more munitions, that's more munitions, even if they're not very good, that fall on Ukraine, bad. But I think it's more than that. I think the concern is that desperation may force these two countries and maybe others, we've seen it with Belarus, break precedent, start to think about things in ways that have never been thought about. And by that, I mean bad things, ways of cooperating or helping each other that do fundamentally change how things have been done.
Well, you know who else must have been watching this meeting? Of course, China. And this is all happening in a region where tensions have been very high recently. I want to ask you a little bit about China here. We heard warnings about a possible Chinese invasion of Taiwan, maybe within the next year. Joint Chiefs Chairman Mark Milley has said that. And this week, Republican Representative Mike Gallagher said that China's current economic problems might not prevent an invasion anytime soon. How should we be thinking about the possibility of an invasion of Taiwan?
Well, and the president was asked about that earlier at a press conference. You know, would bad domestic times lead to Chinese aggression? That's called classically a war diversion. Those don't happen very often. You know, you do that and maybe the war doesn't go so well, and then you've doubled down on your bad situation. Also, amphibious assault, probably the hardest thing to do as a military challenge, probably the hardest. They haven't done it before. In fact, they haven't fought a lot of wars. The last one they fought, they lost. So
not as imminent as people are saying, in your opinion.
Unless push comes to shove. As long as it's a war of choice, then everyone can afford to push it off to the next year or the next decade.
Yeah.
But this is an issue of identity and vital interest to China. So if something were to happen and where they felt like, even though they didn't want to, and even though they were weak, if they had to fight, they would fight in the same way we would fight to protect Hawaii, even if we had tough times at home.
Jim Walsh at MIT, thanks so much, as always. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Peter.